This is Jennifer Hunt with Alison Finley on the 5th of May 2015 at home in Perth, Scotland. Alison, would you just like to introduce yourself?
I'm Alison Findlay. I've been in WRVS for 16 years, I think it was, all told. Maybe a little more than that. Not sure now when I left. But I'm married to husband Malcolm and have one daughter, Pamela.
And why did you join WRVS?
Well, we had moved here in 1984 and I felt I needed to... I'd always volunteered in some way or another. We moved up from Monifieth to Perth and I wanted to meet other people and to become involved in the community.
And when did you join?
Well, it says on my card 1986, but I think I was actually in for some time before that, but not long.
As an unofficial volunteer?
Yes.
And what did you know about WRVS before you joined?
Very little. I knew they did Meals and Wheels, because they did Meals and Wheels in Dundee, which is where I'm from originally, and I thought I could help with that. Then I discovered all the rest that they did.
And what are your earliest memories of WRVS?
Being in the back of a large white van, sort of transit size, with one other lady in the back, large containers that held the soup, which we ladled out into jugs, and a big hot box, which had the main meals and puddings in. And we were normally driven around by a man then, which, you know, was a bit sexist, perhaps. Mm. Most of the drivers appeared to be men. But you were thrown about quite a bit because there weren't proper seating in the back. So it was a bit manic on occasions, between road conditions and where we had to go to deliver the meals. Sometimes the soup was splashing out of the container and the meals sliding about as well as us sliding about. And you leapt in and out of the van quite athletically, I say, at that time. I don't think I could do it now. But great fun, nevertheless.
And Meals on Wheels was the first service you were involved with?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And really it gave... I mean, I had been a radiographer. So I'd seen life, I would have said, and how some folk had to live. But it didn't really prepare me for how many elderly and very lonely people there were.
You said that the drivers were men. Were they members of WRVS or were they from the council?
No, they were also Meals and Wheels volunteers for WRVS. Mm-hmm. Huge team in Perth. And because we cover 2,000 square miles, each village or small town all had a team. And that was really when I discovered, you know, how large WRVS were in Perth and began to see what else they did.
How often would you go out on a Meals on Wheels round?
Once every 3 weeks we did. There was a huge team, certainly in Perth City. But throughout the area, which was wonderful, because when I actually became emergency services organiser there for the area, I tapped into all that team that was already set up. So it was a huge, huge team we had eventually for emergency services because of the Meals on Wheels.
How would you describe a typical Meals on Wheels round?
Well, we normally had 20 odd addresses to go to, and there were 5 routes, I think, in Perth. They worked very closely with social work, so we were divided into areas of the town, and you could do it within maybe an hour, which of course now is the legal limit. You would have to... but at that time, and depending on road conditions, it can be snowy here. It could take a little longer than that. And depending on how your clients were, there could be emergencies. You could not get entry into a property. So it wasn't all plain sailing every time, but and sometimes a wee bit challenging, but certainly could be entertaining on occasions as well. I do remember one occasion going into a gentleman, and I don't think I'd been in there before, but I sort of, yoo-hoo, it's Meals and Wheels, and very often the outside door was open, just knock and or ring the bell and go in. But there was a shout, "I'm in the bath," and I thought, "I hope you're going to stay there." So I just quickly left his meal in the kitchen and beat a hasty retreat. But no, there were some lovely, lovely people that we... And because you went in every 3 weeks, you could see if a person was ill and or deteriorating anyway. And we had an arrangement with social work in the office that if you came back and you thought there was something amiss, there was a message left in a book, and a social worker went that afternoon just to check that things were okay. So that was where we felt, you know, when I became a trustee much later, the value of that check that went on each day. When I started with Meals and Wheels, people had a 3-day delivery. That was the maximum. But ultimately it was 6 here. So it was a wonderful check that people were well and not lying behind the door ill, which we did discover on occasions as well, which was lost then when frozen meals started.
Did you ever deliver frozen meals?
No.
They were always hot?
Yes, always hot.
And what sort of food were you providing?
It was always soup, a main course, and a pudding. And sometimes it should have been a cold pudding, but it was always in the hot box. It was never ice cream, I may hasten to say. But it was a very wholesome meal. And very often, contrary to instructions, I know, and many of us did know, that quite often people would have the soup and the pudding at lunchtime and keep the main course and heat it up for tea time. So it, while it wasn't regulation, it certainly went on, we know that. But it was a very wholesome meal. It would be meat and normally potatoes and a veg, and perhaps rhubarb and custard, or a tart and custard, something like that. And a nice veg soup. It was certainly a very nice meal.
And did you have a partner who you delivered the meals?
Yes, yes. But we did swap. If it was always the intention that if you couldn't do your what was on the rota, that you change with someone else. And very often you change with someone else who did the same route because it was easier. Then we went down to little vans, and there were just two of us, driver and a deliverer. But depending on what happened, both of us delivered on occasions. But and I think it continued like that until Meals and Wheels stopped in Perth, which was very sad. because while folk get no doubt a very nice meal, and very often I know if they can't prepare it themselves in the microwave, someone goes in and does that. But there's not, with some people, there's not the same check on how they are.
It's not the same contact.
No, and very, very often we were the only person that would be in that particular day to see how they were.
Do you remember who was in charge of Meals on Wheels when you were helping that service?
To start with... No, I don't. Maggie Ewan was... the final person. Gosh, I can't think who it was to start with. I don't think there was a Meals and Wheels organiser as such when I started. I think it was just the office. That there were two people in the office, as well as the organiser, and I think it was the two ladies in the office who organised, and I can't remember who they were now, right at the very beginning when I started.
Was the office based in Perth?
Yes. Uh-huh. You would have passed it, actually, as you came up the road in the bus. The Roslyn House, which is now flats, and I can point it out to you when we go down to the station, that's where social work worked out of at that time. And there was a small building round the back that our offices were in there. Very comfortable. It was very nice. The free parking and it worked very well, and close association with social work here, which was great.
And were the meals cooked by WRVS?
No, they were cooked by at the hospital. So you went and picked up the van, or the driver did, and you went up, picked up the meals in the van, and then set off to do your round. They took the car or the van back to the parking space, and again, that space was part of social work, which worked very well. I don't think there's anything else there.
Do you have any other memories of Meals on Wheels?
I can remember one day going into a lady not too far away from here, and I called her Mrs. And she said, I'm still a treasure to be collected, which I thought was really funny. But old folk were so pleased to see you. Getting emotional.
Do you want me to pause it for
a... In Perth. And, you know, icy roads. And the van skidding and, you know, this hot box and the soup in an oven, you know, taking off across the van and, oh dear, dear. Of course, it can be, I mean, really quite dark here in the winter. And, I mean, stumbling upstairs that weren't lit and all sorts. But, we all survived and... We did have get-togethers, you know, volunteering thank yous, which was super because you were with people of like mind, which was good as well, but and create camaraderie with, and I did get to meet quite a number of people, some of whom I'm still very friendly with, which is very nice, and then you discovered that. You know, oh, I work up at the hospital as well. Oh, or I do Books on Wheels too. So saying emergency services were never mentioned, which was really strange. But, and I knew people who came, because you were in the office and other folk kept coming in and out. And we also had a clothing store at that time. So there were always, you know, clients coming into that, if you like, too. So it was a busy, busy place down there.
Mm-hmm. Because you would have been running a lot of services out of that one.
Oh yes,
one
yes,
office,
all
it?
Running out of.
Because was it the county office as well?
Yes, yes. Huge amount of services. As I say, I had no idea the width of and depth of the work that we did, until much further down the line, really. But I certainly went in as a rookie. No doubt about that. It was quite a revelation to me finally about all what we did.
Because when you went into the office, was that when you became Old People's Welfare Organiser?
No, not at that time. As I said, Jenny Milne, who was the organiser at that time, they had a dog and she walked it past, and I was gardening out here, leaning on my hoe, having a bit of a rest, and she said, if you've got time to lean on that hoe, you've got time to do more for me. That was the kind of person she was. So come and see me. So Jean Stewart, who was an Old People's Welfare organiser at that time, wanted to retire and had done the job for, I can't tell you how long, but some time anyway. And I met her in the office and I went out once or twice with her, just to see what the job of organiser involved. And what she said to me was, it was mostly the Darby and Joan clubs, of which I think there were maybe eight about that, I think. And she said to me, you don't really need to do anything. The clubs run very, very well without us, but no one ever goes in to say thank you to them. So I saw that as the primary task, really, to go in and make sure that they were thanked from a higher up level. Not that I classed myself as a higher up level, but I was bringing the thanks from the office, and because certainly Jenny Milne couldn't have got out as often as I did. And I made it my business to be around these clubs on a very regular basis. We're on a handicraft competition, of which I've got photographs of. I think it says biannual, and I think I thought we just did it once a year, but perhaps we did do it twice, winter and summer. But and all the clubs could contribute to that. And we had a huge show of very, very good crafts, wonderful stuff. So it was my job to organise that venue, to get judges to come along on the day, and to organise the teas and the coffees. And we had a wonderful time, because they all came in from the clubs to have a look and a nosy at what everyone else had done, who'd got first. And, you know, it was a great, great success. That was one thing. And we tried to make sure that the volunteers who did run the show, again, were at a volunteer's thank you at least once a year. Everybody who volunteered for WRVS came in either into City Hall or another venue, or perhaps it was done locally if there was a big enough team. But I saw that as my primary task, and I had a wonderful time going around these clubs. And they fulfilled a huge hole that might have been in loneliness again. And a lot of these clubs were rural, and people lived a bit of a distance away, perhaps, from where they met. And it happened once a week or once a fortnight. In the afternoon, folk went along. They got a bit of information. They maybe played dominoes or indoor bowls or cards, or they had entertainment. They were fantastically well run, and then they got a very, very nice afternoon tea, which meant that they didn't have tea when they went home. Lots and lots of sandwiches, sausage rolls, all homemade. And they were absolutely super, and the ladies who ran them were great. One occasion we took over the whole of Perth Theatre at Christmas time and bussed them all in for the panto, which they thoroughly enjoyed, free ice creams, and I don't think we had to pay any of that. I think that was all sourced from local fundraising and the donations, which was great. Another occasion we had a lunch for anyone and everyone who wanted to come in from the clubs, in the City Hall, Christmas lunch, and that was cooked by Friarton Prison. And we had entertainment in the afternoon, the children singing and the other bits and pieces of entertainment. I don't just exactly remember now, but I do remember the children singing carols and things, the party hats and festivities. It was a super, super lunch. But no, I was a magician's assistant on occasions, and I had never played indoor bowls. I was taught how to play indoor bowls. I declined the dominoes because it was far too serious, and the men in the club tended to play the dominoes. Great. That was a great time. One of the ladies came to me, quite far on in my career with old people's welfare, and she said to me, do you think I should still be organising, Alison? And I said, oh, gracious me, why ever not? Unless you feel you can't, you know, no, I love doing it. But, you know, I just feel I've been doing it for such a long time. Now, I don't remember how long she'd been doing it for, but certainly a long, long time. And I thought this woman was in her late 70s. She was actually 90. But she and her team were absolutely fabulous. And Unfortunately, I can't go to someone's funeral this morning, which I would have done, but she was treasurer out at one of the clubs, and she died just last week, and I would have gone to Jean's funeral, but because she was fantastic, and she's now into her 90s and was still organised with the organising the club, or helping to organise it. So it's a lifetime commitment, some of this. But feisty ladies, and did such wonderful service. I feel they, at that time, and possibly still do, when they speak about daycare, that was a deluxe afternoon care. Because they knew these people so well. They went and picked them up if they couldn't get there. They took them home again. And made sure that those folk were looked after. It was, and I hope, still going in some places. But a wonderful, wonderful way to look after folk locally.
And did you take on other services in older people's welfare?
We had caravans. One caravan had been, or had they both been bought? Certainly one man bought the caravan in memory of his wife. She had been a long time volunteer with us. And that caravan was bought, and perhaps both of them were. And then we managed to update them. At least once in my career with WRVS. But then they only paid £10 for a week in the caravan. And we had one at Blair Athol and one at Anstruther. And there was another one we managed which actually belonged to the Blind Society of Perth, and it was at Blairgowrie. It wasn't just as popular with our members, but certainly the other two were. The one at Blair Athol, certainly, it was in a lovely position. And, in the castle grounds, which is a huge caravan park now. But it was a better class of caravan, if you like. Little upmarket from the ones at Anstruther and Blairgowrie. But I organised the let of that, which could be quite problematic because everybody wanted the same week. These were people who could go on a holiday at any time, but they all wanted July, which could be really, really a problem. And, you know, if people had it, perhaps 2 years on the trot, I would try and steer them into another week. And the forms that I eventually sent out had, you know, first, second and third choice. And it was pointed out to them that if you had your first choice last time, you might not get it this time. But, dear, we're all beasts of habit. Mm. And if you've had that week in July, you really want it each year. But, and really from that, I discovered then that there were lots of people, quite a number of folks, who were on their own and who wanted to go to the caravan on their own, which I really didn't think was an option. As you see out here, I have a caravan of my own. And I thought, no, gas heaters and all sorts is not a good idea, an elderly person by themselves. And no one really to perhaps pay attention to what was going on. So I asked Jenny Milne, she was still the organiser at that time, if we could perhaps do something for these people. I wasn't just quite sure what. But Jenny was always open to suggestions, and I said, why can't we take them on holiday? We could perhaps take them on holiday. So we knocked that idea about, but of course we knew that they couldn't afford really lots of money to go on holiday to a hotel or wherever. But there were two Christian centres, one in the Borders and one in up in Highland Perthshire. I won't say the names, that we decided that we could possibly take away a couple of carloads of folk. So three of us, and I think it was five. I used to have photographs of them too. I don't know where they are. Perhaps five or six. I can't remember now. Did we have three cars? But we took these folk off on holiday. And, oh dear, it was just... It was very problematic. We got people through social work, really. People that perhaps we could identify to from Meals and Wheels that perhaps we knew needed a break. But one lady in particular was obviously suffering from dementia, and we didn't, you know, get that information. But my room was next to her, fortunately. They weren't en suite bedrooms, so off she went toddling down the corridor with me in hot pursuit to make sure that she got back to her room. And the first once or twice she went to the gents' toilet instead of the ladies' toilet, which was again a bit problematic. But we had a super time. These people were so appreciative of being taken off for a holiday, and we managed to subsidise it with donations and one or two folk in Perth, trust funds and whatever. We managed to do that, which was good. Another occasion we went up to Perthshire. One of the ladies we actually delivered Meals and Wheels to, poor soul she was, and she hadn't been on holiday for 74 years. Last time she'd had a holiday, she was 10. And she came from that area, which was a complete coincidence. But she could tell us all about the area. And we had an old chap who had been obviously country born and bred, and there was a museum at Blairathill, and he was able to tell us what all these old implements did. So it was a two-way street. We could tell them some things, but... And in the evening we played games and things with them, and, you know, it was a really, really smashing time. And we did that again after the Perth floods, after 93, because it had been so successful before. We did two or three holidays with people who'd been completely washed out in the 93 floods, which was dreadful here. And that was when I became emergency services organiser, after the floods. However, you ask a question. So go through your questions.
Were you part of emergency services before?
No. No. In Perth, we had... I mean, WRVS is renowned for its emergency services. It's really what, you know, why we really started WRVS. During the war and all the war effort that we did. But we only had a very, very small team here. Really, we're used for... The emergency services team were used if we did, like bringing in the volunteers for a thank you. The emergency services team would do the teas and the coffees and things, augmented by other people. It was a very small team. I can't just tell you how many. But at the floods, social work just phoned over. It was still Jenny Milne at that time who was the organiser. And it was Betty Bridgeford, who I know very well now, she's a friend, who was in charge of social work. And we were just phoned over to say, you know, people are completely washed out. It could get much worse. What help can you supply? And Jenny just immediately set to organising a rota. And that went on for over a month. And some of us were there overnight because there were 1,500 and more homes completely washed out. Very much down in the lower part of the town by the river, but elsewhere as well. The Bridge of Erne was badly affected. We had over a foot of snow on the Saturday, Sunday, blizzard conditions, and then we had a very rapid thaw. We're in a huge catchment area here. The Tay is bigger than the Thames. It carries much, much more water. And things just were washed away. And it resulted in a great many folk out of their homes for more than a year. It was really disastrous. I can let you see some photographs of that. I've got a book through the way. So it was after that that by this time there was a new organiser, Avril Duncan, and she asked me if I would set up a team. And I said, but what does it involve? You know, what? Oh, well, you do this and you do that. Maybe 25 folk or so, said she. You know, just a team but the more I went into it, I went and did training with Pat Glynn in Edinburgh. Went down to Easingwold a few times. And became qualified, and then went on to do a senior trainer's certificate. Again, after another jaunt down to Easingwold, because I saw it was really an ongoing problem until we developed the flood defence in Perth and elsewhere, that it could happen again very easily. And I had seen how many folk we required during the emergency. And if it's a 24-hour commitment, as it was for a month, you need more than one lot of people. You need at least three teams in a day. So 24 won't go very far. And to wait for a trainer, there weren't that many trainers in this area at that time. I thought it would be better if I could train people myself. So that was why I became a trainer, mm-hmm. senior trainer then. And made it my business to get as many people as possible on board, which wasn't always, I may say, approved by the powers that be in WRBS. But I had a very friendly arrangement at that time with Betty Bridgeford, and she paid for all my training. So I really didn't feel that it cost WRVS anything. Or if it was, it was a minimum commitment. So I went Arthur Ayrts in Perth and Kinross and got a team organised in every little village and town. And made sure that there were enough of them to cover, and then we could send out from Perth, or they could. I mean, what happened at the start of the flooding in 1993, the Ochter Arder. You'll not know Ochter Arder. Well, it's bypassed by a motorway. Well, not really a motorway, but a big main road now. You don't go through the town, but there was a good Meals and Wheels team out there with a wonderful team leader. And the police brought all the traffic in off the main road because of the road conditions. Lorries were stuck, cars were stuck. It's quite high area. Main road between Glasgow and Perth. So all these lorry drivers and car drivers were brought into Ochter Arder town and put into the town hall. And May and her team, they set about feeding them and bedding them down. They managed to get shops to open, and I mean, conditions were really bad, just speaking about, you know, great depth of snow. And fed all these people until we had the thaw and they could get on their way and the road was open. But what we couldn't get people out from Perth, plus there wasn't a team anyway. So it was a case of realising that could happen in anywhere. I mean, the A9 goes up through Pitlochry, but we had a team there, Meals and Wheels team. So just train folk in as many places as we could, making use very often of the Meals and Wheels organiser. They came to trainings here, or I went out there and did did trainings. But we trained, I can't tell you how many. But I would have thought, by the time I finished my career, upwards of 1,500. And I came up with a new concept, which again was only because of the problems I saw locally. We helped with... Do you know a process of how folk come through into an emergency service?
Yeah.
Yeah. We helped with every stage of that. And the emergency services officer for Perth and Kinross, Bill Maddox, he had seen the problems in 93 as well, and started to develop with others a computerised reception form. At the 93, they were asked all for all their personal information. They at the desk, front desk, and given a number. Now, it was just a cloakroom ticket. Now, folk, you'll discover if you do, go around. There's very, very many different types of methods that people work with for emergency services. But I felt we had it pretty slick. But so that's reception. Then the social work want their information. Housing want their information, and the police want their information. So folk were sitting at four different desks, and if you're pretty traumatised, that's a real problem. So we tried to come up with a computer programme that would do it in a one-er, and that was what we did. They came through reception pretty quickly. We took their name, and their address, and that was all. And then they went to another desk much later on, after they'd had a cup of tea and had been comfortable and got a change of clothing, all of that. They went and they had one other session. So we did that. We helped with the teas and the coffees. I had a team of people who could go to people's homes and bring them in or take them home. And all of these tasks were divided out. And after a training, I would take folk through all of that process and say to them, now, what job would you want to do? So you had round pegs and round holes, which was great. If people weren't good at interviewing folk or whatever, and we gained the respect, very much so, of social work, but the police. I can remember Jim Edmonds, who was the emergency services chief officer for this area, for the police. They seemed to me, I don't know if volunteers could do our forums. I beg your pardon. So he said, well, let's have a dry run at it. Or I maybe said to him, let's have a dry run and see how we go. So I gathered the folk who wanted to do that. Up in the top flight, the story of Perth headquarters of the police, and we went through a dummy run, and he was very impressed. But then I had bank managers and doctors, school teachers, every profession. Now, these people were used to interviewing people. Why wouldn't they be able to interview someone and fill up a form? It's incredible. So after that, we were working. And they came and helped me with the training. They would come and explain what the police did. And social work came, and it was a very, very much a team effort. But really, because of, there's nothing to focus the mind like having a real emergency.
Yeah.
You can go through all sorts of things, but you don't really realise how crunched time it is if you haven't been through it. And lots of traumatised people with lots of varying needs that you and I wouldn't even consider a thought. But and traumatised people don't always... I mean, I knew that through my work as a radiographer. If people are shocked or upset, they don't always. They cooperate to the best. And can be quite unpredictable. So you need to train people, really, to cope with that. We did dummy runs training. I did refresher trainings. Every year I would do one or two. Not always in Perth. And we got a hall, and half the team would be evacuees, acting as evacuees, and half would work. And then we swapped over. and the team that did the food made lunch. So it was a whole day thing, or at least from 10 till sort of 3 or 4, which worked very well. And I really, really enjoyed that. I found it quite challenging, but I certainly enjoyed doing that. And I had loads of call-out lists. With Pitlochry, the whole team would be there, but broken down into the folk who did which jobs. There were 5 tasks that I had it broken down into. And I just had to phone the team leader, and she had a cascade. She knew exactly what to do, who to call out. And it did work well.
Did you have many emergencies in Perthshire?
Not that many. At one time I actually had to cover for Dundee as well, and that was the most problematic, actually. There's a big hotel, it's a Malmaison now, actually. It's been redeveloped, but at that time it was, or had been, a hotel, and it was a home for the homeless, finally, for Dundee Social Work, and it had gone on fire. And I was asked to come down to Municipal Community Centre and do the needful with emergency services. So I'd called a number of folk, got some people organised from Perth to come down as well. And but because of who they were, homeless, and not prone to working terribly well with the police, can I say? They came in with fictitious names, and the police wanted to go onto a bus, but of course, onto the bus with a whole load of policemen. Oh, no, that wasn't a good... So they drifted in, realising that, where they had to go. But it was a different name you got in the morning. It was terribly chaotic, really. But it worked well as far as managing to feed and clothe and look after them. And another occasion, I was asked to go over to Fife. There had been a problem with the gas in Tayport, and I got a phone call again from the organiser, regional organiser, and to go there. And we had to feed 74 gas employees. Because, of course, once the gas goes off, a gas man has to come back to your home to make sure that it's... So there were a great deal of... So that was quite good fun, because no one was hurt and no one was injured, and it was just a case of feeding people. So that was quite good. Not another true emergency like we had in 93. Not anything on a comparable scale. That was just dreadful. Because some people had lost absolutely everything. I think I said to you that we took some people on holiday. There was one lady in particular I went to interview before we took her on holiday, and she said every night that it was in the winter, when it got dark, and if it was snowy or if it was heavy rain, she sat all night with her coat on and a suitcase. Now, I mean, that was more than a year after the event. And while there were no deaths, there were very, very many people who were quite traumatised for, a long time. And she had been in sort of pensioners' houses, they were called at that time. And the floodwater had been up to her ceiling. And she had no upstairs. So everything that had been in her home, photographs, memorabilia, what you and I would want to hang on to, were all gone. And there were a number of people like that, and we took them off on holiday. This particular woman that I've been telling you about, she said that was the first time she'd slept all night. So it was beneficial.
Yeah.
Plus, it put them into contact with other like-minded people who'd be through the same experience, and that I believe helps to get over an issue as well, if you speak to people who've who've had the same problem. But no, our emergency services. There was this business that's going on just now about VE Day celebrations. We were asked to cover as an emergency services team for an event that was taking place on the North Inch. There was a Black Watch monument and a sort of ceremonial thing that was taking place, and I was asked by social work to go along to a meeting, which I did, and spoke to the chap who was in charge. He was very nice, very charming, and he said they were needing teas done down on the North Inch. Well, of course, there's no electricity there. So there would be a marquee put up, and could I serve tea and biscuits to about 200 folk? Oh, that wouldn't be a problem. And I then organised with social work to get a generator, and we certainly had all the equipment, urns and tea urns and all of that, and I would manage to do that. Organised a team. Next meeting I went back to, it was up to 400 people. And then another meeting, quite close to the event, he said, well, there was another event taking place in Oban, and they were all Black Watch, I think. They would be coming over as well, perhaps, buses coming over. Okay. But it was open to the public, because they were putting on a display of artillery and tanks and, an army display, so that it would be open to the public as well. But the public weren't to be getting a cup of tea. Okay, then. So the morning of the event, and I had loads of supplies, I may say, which was just as well. We had our team, we were all set up, and this chap arrived with the generator, council fellow, on the back of a little lorry, and he dropped it off the back. I think he was trying to lift it off by himself, which was an impossibility, and it wouldn't work. So that was the first problem. So Bell's Sports Centre is just off the Inch, further up. So we hived over there and filled up our tea urns with boiling water from them, which was very kind of them to give us, and one or two urns, and back across, not terribly health and safety, back across carrying all these things. So we knew we had enough hot water to get the thing at least under started. This fellow arrived back with another generator, which started to work. So great, urns were all plugged in, all hunky-dory. The other thing I had asked for was a water supply. So an army bowser arrived, but the tap just dribbled. Now, I'm telling you this because it has huge, huge influence on what happened later. It just dribbled out. So I kept this bucket underneath, and once the bucket was full, I managed to top up the urns then, but it was not great. However, the thing got underway, we started to serve our tea, and then this presentation took place, but there was too much noise from the generator. What were they to do? Oh, well, there were straw bales further over for part of the army exhibition that was going on. Bring those over and muffle the sound from the generator, which was what they did. The bales of hay, straw, whatever, went on fire too close to the generator. So there was this fire going on. We were trying to serve teas. This drippy, drippy water bowser, not much use as a fire prevention. All hell let loose. Everybody was running about like scalded cats, trying to put this fire out. And this man pushed me out of the way to get the bucket and started to turn the tap on the bowser. And I said to him, it won't run any faster than where we had it. We had it at its optimum drip level, if you like. The chap who was in charge of the generator, there was a big black bin, not just a litter bin, a big dustbin. He went down to the river, because it's right down by the river, and put this bin in the water. But of course, it was such a large container, he just about went in after the bin, because it was too big, too heavy then to haul out. So he's trying to do that. The army had a fire unit much further over, so all was well. Of course, what happened, the generator didn't work again then. However, we did have enough hot water. But we served 2,850 cups of tea that day. So we were very pleased with ourselves.
Making all that tea.
Making all that tea. The only thing we ran out of was sugar. The old soldiers take quite a lot of tea, sugar in their tea. But no, we had the we felt we did well that day, but not without that problem. But it was great fun. But we had quite a number of occasions when, like that, we were asked to come out and do teas or look after folks in that way. And we looked after our volunteers, as I say. They did cups of tea and thank yous.
And while you were emergency service organiser, did you find that the way WRBS wanted emergency service to work changed?
Well, it changed in as much as we had paid organisers then, paid managers, which I didn't feel worked as well. Latterly, we had, my manager stayed up in Highland region somewhere, I'll not say perhaps, and really had no local knowledge of here. And to the extent that he'd been asked to put us on standby, which very often happened, you know, you could have a situation where they thought it was going to get to the stage where folk would need to be evacuated, but not always. And he had phoned up, not me, because I think I'd maybe left by that time. Certainly was unavailable. But he phoned quite an elderly member. Why, I have no idea. But he would have a copy of my list. So whether she was a name that just, or whether he tried a number of people, I have no idea. But he said, you know, we're needing to go on standby at the high school. And she said, high school? But it's the grammar school. Which was, the emergency services manager for Perthink and Ross, the paid fellow for council, he had nominated schools that we would use. And we'd very often done trainings in these schools, so you knew exactly how the setup went. This fellow had said Perth High School, which is just along the road here. And she had the wits to say, the high school, but that's not normally where we would go. Oh, well, they said the high school. Leave it just now, the way I'll get back to you. Well, it was actually the high school in Kinross, which is miles away from here.
Yeah.
There was a team down there, but we still would have needed to know the correct venue. But now, whether he'd been told Kinross, I have no idea. But it was certainly easier when the organiser was more local.
Mm.
And you knew who to contact. That was, you needed to have this line of, you know, call out, which we certainly had, and elsewhere. I mean, Kate Toynbee, for instance, you know, was very much on the ball. But, you know, I felt it wasn't just as well organised, because trying to do it into a bigger area, I don't think, you needed to know the local knowledge, really. That would have been my opinion, perhaps not correctly, but I carried for 10 years, I carried a bleep, 24/7. apart from the 2 or 3 weeks when I went on holiday and I gave it to somebody else. So you knew, and I mean my personal team, I knew that if it was something to do with food, for instance, there was an occasion when there was a lot of burst pipes that gone in insulated attics down in a housing scheme down here, and not realising that the pipes weren't then, you know, house was insulated, pipes up in the attic, you know, absolutely freezing. Yeah. Lots of flooding, lots of folk had to be evacuated, and it was just feeding, and they were going to be rehoused so very quickly into accommodation, so it was really only food. So I just knew I had to phone the woman along the road here who had been in charge of catering at Perth College and say to her, Anna, we've got a problem down in Tulloch School, folk are needing fed. And I knew that I didn't need to do anything else, you know. And I got, you know, a team organised to ferry folk to the place. But again, it was just one phone call. And he organised his team. So I was then free to get down there and make sure things were okay down there. Now, if you're dealing with that from miles away, everybody needs a centre point to, as a control, if you like. I felt that was missing. That it needed more local control than it got latterly. Rightly or wrongly, that was my opinion.
And while you were an emergency services organiser, was that when you were also a company member and on the vice chairman's?
Yes, committee? I was on the vice chairman's committee at that time. But when I became a trustee, I felt I couldn't, you know, do that job correctly. And there was a woman who wanted to take over from me, which was great. Mm-hmm. I didn't really feel that, you know, because I was away so much more. I felt that I needed to pass the baton on to someone else. But certainly as I was from the vice chair's committee, yes.
And how did you become a member of the vice chair's committee?
I have no idea. I suppose because I had shown willing to do a number of tasks, that's possibly why. And the powers that be in Edinburgh, I mean, I had gone through to meetings, so they got to know me a wee bit, I suppose. I didn't have full-time employment, nor did lots of people either, but I really have no idea. But I was asked, and I thought, well, you know, perhaps if I'm being asked, I should go and do it. And, of course, Alice was in charge of that group. So, I mean, what's not to like about Alice? She's a lovely person.
She was vice chairman at the time.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was. Elaine Ross was the Scottish organiser at that time in Edinburgh. Very nice person, too. They all were very, very kind and you know, if you were a new girl, you got shepherded around, and which was very nice. And I think all the meetings that I attended were all at Milton Hill.
In Oxford?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Which is no more, is it?
Nope.
No.
Now all at Cardiff.
No, you just... So, and where do the trustees meet now?
In London.
In London.
At... our office in Grosvenor Gardens.
Right, right.
That's where they'll have their meetings now.
Uh-huh. Did I attend one meeting in London? I might have done, but the rest were all in... Yes, I think I did, because I can remember... but not at Brixton. It was in a hotel somewhere. Because their headquarters were in Brixton. But I was never there. But I think, because I can remember Didcot being bought. So I must have gone to meetings elsewhere, but I don't honestly remember that. I seem to think about it was an Ibis in London. An Ibis Hotel in London, somewhere.
And what did you do as a vice chairman?
Well, really, there were four of us. Were there four of us in Scotland? I think so. Yes. Myrtle Porteous. I don't know if she's still alive, is she? Myrtle.
I'll have to ask Alice.
Rachel Fraser, who's changed her name now. She's Rachel... Gracious me, what's her married name? She's got married again. Husband died. Rachel and Marion Yule from Up Elgin Direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to see Marion.
Have you been to see Marion? Marion, I have lots of stories as well. and myself, four of us. Uh-huh. I've got a photograph, actually, of us, the four of us. So we divvied up Scotland. Rachel was Edinburgh, Marion up the road there. Myrtle was Glasgow or West, and I was sort of Greater Tayside. And we went out and spoke about WRVS and handed out medals, and they went along to tea parties and tried to promote WRVS to the best of our ability. I had been involved with lots of talks with emergency services, so you know, you did the sort of recruitment bit, if you like, on those events as well. And then we got together as a group here, the four of us. And then Marion became a trustee, and Sylvia Bertram from Inverness came on to the vice chair's committee. And again, we kept meeting as a group here to discuss Scottish problems in particular. Went down to Alice's meetings at Milton Hill. So I did that for, I can't tell you how long now.
About 6 years, I think it was sort of three.
Was it two lots of six? You have my history better than I have, to be perfectly honest. Do you have a copy there? No. I didn't. Those dates weren't all, you know, I thought, oh, are these accurate?
Because I know that Alice did 6 years, because she started the vice chairman.
Yeah, she did.
And she did two lots of three.
See, I got company member there in 1996 with a question mark at it, because I'm not sure.
Yes, because the company members came first. And
yes,
Alice...
but I don't think... Because I then was asked, see, in 1998, to become a trustee. I didn't do it that long. I don't think I did it for 6 years.
No. Is it maybe two years and then moved on to the trustee?
Uh-huh. Because I had no intentions of becoming a trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this letter from... We were all going down to a meeting anyway, because both of them tended to be around about the same time. And Lisa, what's her name, who was secretary for the trustees committee, and vice chair, I think, she sent me this letter asking me to send my CV. And I phoned her up. I said, Why are you needing a CV from me? Oh, well, it's just the trustees need to know. If you're becoming a trustee, there was going to be a vote. You will need a CV. I said, who put my name forward as a trustee? And it was Annie Boyd, who was by this time Scottish manager. And I thought, trustee. So I knew Marion Yule. They was a trustee by that time, and I think I got in touch with her and asked, you know, what does it involve? And I had asked Lisa, you know, to send me stuff and let me see what was involved, you know, you think. And then down at the vice chair committee meeting, I think I spoke to Alice then. So she said to me, oh, no, you must do it, you must do it. So I thought, oh, well, give it a whirl, see how I get on. But that war, I found that quite challenging, but wonderful. I'd been a trustee of various things. You know, I'd been on board for, you know, junior chamber and the one or two other things, but certainly nothing as challenging as this. I mean, it's a huge business. You were, and well, at that time it certainly was. I think we'd 120 or 140 or something volunteers, 1,000 volunteers at that time, which we'll not have now, I'm sure. And that was a wonderful time. I certainly did 6 years at that. And enjoyed my time. Not the travel, but I enjoyed my time up and down, and my involvement with organising things in Scotland and down there. And meeting all the people that I did. And attending meetings all over. And in the Channel Islands, I represented WRVS at a meeting over there. It was quite interesting and very, very worthwhile, I felt anyway. Whether I made a difference, I'm not sure, but it was certainly good.
Do you remember who the chairman was at the time you were addressing?
Elizabeth Toulson was there for 1 or 2 years. And then Tina Teagan, both women gave a lot. Quite different ladies, I would have said. And Alice, of course. But it was a good team. Jerry Burton, and then Mark Lever
as chief executive.
Yes. Uh huh.
And did they have different styles of managing?
Yes. Yes. Uh huh. Yes, I would have said. Mark was far more modern in outlook. I'm not criticising Jerry Burton at all. Because both gave, way and above what anybody would have been expecting to do for the wonderful representatives for WRVS. And the fact that were men, I thought, was quite good. Really, I'm not a feminist in any way. And they certainly, got over the male point of view. And of course, we had one or two men on the board as well, as trustees, the experts in their field. And in a way, perhaps that was the start of encouraging men to join the organisation. I would have liked to think so. Not just as drivers, but doing many things, as no doubt they still do, which was good.
And what was changing about WRVS while you were a trustee?
Oh, the big change was paid people coming in. You could see why that started, because very often, as a volunteer, dealing with paid people, now this is a sweeping statement, I know, but you very often had to prove yourself. A volunteer. Now, I spoke to you earlier, or told you earlier, about the experience with the police here. People forget that you're standing in front of them as a volunteer. They don't appreciate what you've done in a prior life. And I can remember that. One occasion I went up to Inverness to speak to a group, and there was someone being quite derogatory about volunteers. And I thought, that's not a very nice thing to say. So I thought, right, I'll just put a wee bit into the beginning of my speech. So I was speaking about the floods in Perth, and they were all professionals that were there. Social work, fire, police, ambulance, the firemen, all professionals. And I said, now, what do you see when you look at me. And I said, a wee WRVS wifey who can make the tea, because that was what WRVS were viewed as doing, great at making tea. And we were exceptional at making tea. But if I tell you that if you were scraped up off the A9 in an accident, the second person who would be dealing with you would be me. So it was a hush. I said, volunteers all have expertise elsewhere. And the one thing that my life as a radiographer taught me was that you didn't panic. And if you were panicking, you certainly didn't relay it to the person in front of you. They, as professionals, I mean, a fireman or a policeman might see a situation as being, oh my goodness me, but the last thing they're going to do is, so they're professional, but so are we. And when I asked people to come on board to do emergency services, I recruited from every and any field. The people who were very professional, the lady who I asked to come on to the team to do the food, as I said earlier, managed the refectory at Perth College. Hundreds of people every day she was feeding. So she knew about large amounts of food. She knew how to cook it. She knew how to prepare it. She knew how to keep it hot. All of that. We certainly, as a team, had to go and do our food handling and those kinds of certificates to make things okay, the health and safety wise. But she knew her stuff and was already qualified. So people needed to have a more open mind about volunteers. And I found that was quite challenging always with WRVS. And I'm sure folk find that no matter where they volunteer, that they have to. And I could see where the paid management came in, because very often, if you were dealing with big contracts and things like Meals and Wheels contracts, that they didn't want to deal with a volunteer. They wanted to deal with someone who was employed.
Did you find WRVS were becoming more business-like and more
yes
professional?
Yes, and both of those were required. But what we had were management and senior management coming in who had never dealt with volunteers. And that was tricky, because volunteers really need to be treated differently. Not difficult to put that into words, but if someone's coming in 9 to 5 and they're earning money for their mortgage, they have a totally different outlook from one who's there from 9 to 5 as a volunteer. I'm quite sure you could appreciate that. They're there because they want to be there. You've got to volunteer to realise how much you get back. It's nothing to do with money. It's fulfilment, it's feeling you're making this difference. All of these things that folks speak about as a volunteer. And you do, and it is very, very worthwhile. And you meet interesting people who are also volunteering. Quite different from someone who goes in for money. They're there because they maybe need to be there. Very few folk that you hear. I'm thrilled to bits to go into work every day. And there'll be some volunteers who think, oh dear, I've got to do that today. But by and large, volunteers are there because they want to be there. So I think people need to be managed in a different way. What you might be able to say to someone who's in paid employment, you cannot always say that to someone who's volunteering. And I felt that was... there were tricky situations that developed because of that. People's lack of appreciation of that, if you like. I'm not saying they weren't good at managing. Many were. Some weren't, but then that's true of any organisation. But there was a lack of insight, I think, sometimes as to how they should be dealing with volunteers.
Were there changes to the services WRBS were giving in the local community?
I wouldn't have said so. Certainly, hospital. Now, I had nothing ever to do with hospitals, apart from as a trustee, but certainly that became big time, if you like. Very, very big hospitals with, and that's where the professionalism needed to come in. You needed to have trained retail managers for those shops. You know, I mean, as a trustee, I heard stories about, you know, old ladies who couldn't still work the tills. They still wanted to come along and do their shift, but they did their shift with a, you know, an ice cream container with some cash in it. That obviously that won't do. And I mean, these tills were, you know, they did a stock run as they as you take off. You know, if it was 2 Mars bars, that comes off. You don't have to stock take with these big tills. They so if you're dealing with, you know, money in a carton of, you know, ice cream carton. Now this did happen. I don't know where, but there were elderly members of the association or WRVS who perhaps went up to big modern tills, big modern retail units. That's the truth of it. But these situations have to be managed. When you have volunteers, you've got to manage those situations well, and that didn't happen. But the need was certainly there because of that. I mean, that was one place where we needed to be far more professional. And you needed in retail people who knew the stuff, definitely. And contracts were coming in for most things. You know, Meals and Wheels contracts had to be organised. You know, books allowed even, or Books on Wheels rather. Library staff, it was big business. And a huge turnover. At that time, I don't know what like it is now, but I mean, there's certainly still a shop down at PRI, for instance. And we do other things down there. You know, there's a welcome desk, and folk will take you to a ward if you're not sure where it is. And I think there's still a book trolley goes round. I don't think we're doing the newspapers now, but perhaps we do. And the shop. And cafe. I mean, that's still functioning, yeah. And I'm sure it does elsewhere as well. So there was a need for management. But not without its problems.
How long were you a trustee for?
6 years. Did 2 lots of 3.
And when did you step down from the board?
Back in 2000. Well, it would be 1998. 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I would come out. And I finished with emergency services. I was still on the
rota.
And still on as a sort of, you know, assistant organiser, if you like, in 2005, 2006, somewhere around about there. I wanted a bit more local organisation for the reasons I said to you. And I wanted the team retrained all throughout Perthshire. It hadn't been done for, I think, 4 or 5 years. And I wanted folk retrained and the call-out sheets up to date. And that was refused, so I resigned. There were people on that call-out list who were dead. 74, I think, out of the list. And I just felt I couldn't be, you know, if you phone up and someone's ill or someone's just died, there's an excuse. But if folk have been dead for maybe a year and you're still calling them, that seems unprofessional to me. So I didn't want to be involved with that. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to. And fair enough, because of change of staff in social work, there wasn't the same rapport that I had had when I was the organiser, and all our training was being paid. So WRVS were going to have to pay for that training to happen. But I still felt it should have been done, and I wasn't prepared to. I mean, if I'd been called out for an emergency, folk would have been looking to me to be able to organise it as it had been done, and I didn't feel that I was in a good position because of what had or what had not happened as an update and as a retraining thing. And folk were meeting me in the street and saying, "We haven't had a training for ages, Alison. What's, you know, oh well, you know, nothing to do with me." I said, "But I'll, you know, I'm having a meeting. I'll see what I can do." And someone said, "You know," and it, I mean, when I looked at the lists, I thought, this is awful, because one of the folk should actually been a friend of mine and she died 2 years previously. And I thought, you know, that you can't have people's. As I say, if it's happened, just happened, there's an excuse, but not if it's... So these lists needed to be... because they would have been used in an emergency. So that was the reason that I resigned from emergency services. But I was very sad to do so, I may say, because I thoroughly enjoyed my time. And I'm still interested in hearing what goes on, I may say.
Did you keep in touch with WRVS at all?
Initially I did. And I still did one or two things, and I really felt I could have gone back and done Meals and Wheels, but then of course they stopped here. And I wondered for a while about doing Books on Wheels, but I have a bad back because of my radiography days, pulling bodies about. So I didn't really feel that, and I didn't want to be involved with the hospital. I'm afraid. As I say, I did do one or two things, but it just stopped. And the thing is, the personnel down there changed. So, you know, they'll be calling on people that they know rather than them. But I was a bit sad that as a trustee, the organisation generally didn't stay more in touch with me, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I know there was the thing down in St Paul's, but I can't remember now for what reason. I think I was maybe on holiday, was it?
75th anniversary.
Yes.
Service.
Uh-huh, that's right. And when was it held?
It was May 2013.
Uh-huh. I can't remember why I didn't go, but there was a reason anyway. But, I mean, it was a long way to go. There was no structure that I could get a part of, if you know what I mean. You know, no one had said, people are to be staying in these hotels. I mean, I'm a Sir Optimist, and if we have a big meeting, you know, they send you a list of the hotels in the area where folk are staying, and you know that there'll be other Sir Optimists there that you can go along but no one had, you know, given me any indication of, you know, where folk might be, and I didn't know anyone else in this area that was going. I didn't go. But, you know, it would be nice to be in a loop of some description. There's not that many trustees. That you hear what's going on so that you're able to go along if you can. That would be nice. To keep a, you know, slight tenure with the organisation, and stay interested. But I mean, I hear absolutely nothing now. Is there not a newsletter comes out, or
there's the very last Action magazine came out last month,
uh-huh.
And they're not producing it anymore.
Are they not?
And they sent a letter out saying that if you were to find out what we were doing to go on the website, mm-hmm. But of course not all our volunteers have the internet.
No.
At home.
Well, I mean, I could certainly do that, but it's, you know, do they still hold a camp concert every year?
No. We don't do any of the social, what a lot of volunteers who have been to see before have said to me,
uh-huh.
The social side,
yes.
Of WRV,
uh-huh.
Well, Royal Voluntary Service,
yes.
Has gone.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. which is sad. And I realise someone has to organise that, and it has to be paid for, but it's a short window for the organisation, these things. If, you know, if you have a big carol concert somewhere, it could be a short window for all that you do. Ours certainly was. The one that I organised in Edinburgh certainly was. Because it included information about WRVS, and you tended to invite the movers and the shakers, so that you were, sowing seeds perhaps, for future occasions. I certainly would agree with that. And it would be very nice if there was some kind of link, to certainly the folk that gave a lot of time, you know, managers and regional managers and all the folk who were committed for a long, long time. And lots of folk had a lot more service than me. I remember handing over a medal to a lady, and she was 90, down in Broughty Ferry. She did Meals on Wheels every day. I mean, I think it was her life, but, you know, and was so enthusiastic about WRVS. I mean, if you stood, you know, she could tell you about, I mean, I'm trying to think, it was 40 years she'd been a member. And another lady in Longforgan, which is just down in the Carsagarry there, I gave her a medal at an afternoon tea that was organised for her. And she'd driven an ambulance during the Blitz. You know, a little old lady, and so full of, by gum, she could tell you some stories. And again, had been a member for, you know, years and years and years. There should be something that can draw these people together if they want to come and, as I say, showcase WRVS. One would hope, anyway. Maybe all these grey-haired old ladies are not what you want to show off. But it's a way of promoting what we're doing now. Hammering away about... the other thing I did was Girls Brigade. And now it's Sir Optimism that I'm very much involved with. But to let folk know what you do, and to get them involved, and folk are thrown to bits once they are members. I don't know what they think. Oh no, that's not for me or whatever. But it's good works no matter whether it's local or abroad. I mean, Sir Optimism does both things. But WRVS does such, or did. I mean, I'm not up to the mark. I can remember Alice going on. Now, she'll tell you this story. Was it the Queen Mother's 100th birthday? It was some celebration down there anyway. And she was asked to go. And was it one of the Dimbleby's she sat beside? And spoke about WRVS. And volunteering in this country, how much it saved the country. Now, Alice will have that information. She maybe hasn't told you that yet, has she?
No, I've not interviewed her. Alice is
haven't you?
Coming up to me. She keeps
pushing herself away, does she? Ah, dear. Alice went along. I can't. But she'll have that info. The chap was absolutely, I think it was one of the Dimbleby's, was absolutely staggered at the amount of money it saved Britain. Because, of course, at the Queen Mother's funeral and Diana's, the WRVS were heavily involved with both of those events. Both writing and attending to mail and getting... collecting all the flowers and all the teddy bears and things after Diana's death. They heavily involved with that. A lot of our the office staff went along to Buckingham Palace and sat for days doing all the attending to, I'm not sure, letters of condolence and replying to them and whatever. So, highly thought of as an organisation.
And is there anything which we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention?
Well, I organised two events here, which one was the carol concert in the Canongate Kirk in Edinburgh, which was a great success. I've got info me here about that. And the other event was we wanted to do things in Scotland. Well, I wanted to do things in Scotland too. I don't think everything should just happen in one part of the country. You want to really advertise and promote the organisation up in Scotland. So we also organised a reception in Holyrood Palace with Princess Alexandra. So that was a good night. And the other thing, there was a dinner in Stirling Castle, and Princess Anne came to that. And again, that was really promotion. But all three events were well attended, and the reception at the palace could have been better attended, but they were all, a good showcase for WRVS. I can let you have a look through this stuff.
Yeah.
You won't have to do that. What time is it? 25 past 11, just for... Okay for time.
Oh, yeah.
If there is anything else that you can think about...
What was the biggest change you experienced during your time as a volunteer?
I think the changeover to paid management, I think I could say that was the biggest change, because that was quite radical, really. And really impacted on every part of WRVS. Some good and not so good, some not so good. But I would have said that was the biggest change. And as was pointed out to me, and quite rightly so, when you've been a member of an organisation that has been run locally very well, that didn't happen everywhere. I can remember, I'm sure it was Jerry Burton, that I'd been going on about something at a meeting, and he said to me, but not everywhere was... the membership cards that you're speaking about that Alice has saved in Wiltshire, not everywhere kept those cards. I'm sure you realise that. And with the result, you'd know history, and folk don't. I mean, there's me. I have not a clear cut. This is what I did when, where, when. I don't have that either, but. That was on these people's cards. Now, we kept the cards here. And we always had an organiser here who was on the ball. Avril Duncan, who took over from Jenny Milne, who was an excellent manager, Avril Duncan, who took over from her, her mother had been the organiser before Jenny Milne. So Avril was steeped in WRVS. She had delivered Meals and Wheels from 14. when her mother was stuck for somebody, Avril, you can do this. So we had people who were absolutely but that wasn't to say that. But when you've seen this organisation working very well, you assume that that's what's happening elsewhere. But that wasn't. So there was, and as I've said earlier, because we were dealing with, contracts, big hospital retail shops, all of that, there was a need to go over. I realise that, to to proper management, paid management, but it was still a massive change. I think it did impact a bit on goodwill sometimes, from donations. When you know, folk before had been, you know, quite generous, when they saw WRVS people one day it was actually very apparent, because we had a meeting in Perth and there were all these WRVS cars, and that did impact on donations. You know, folk, I think, thought, all these WRVS cars, who's paying for that? And I mean, you will appreciate it, as I do, you want your money, if you're handing over a donation, you want your money to be spent on the end product, not on a car. that did perhaps make a difference to the organisation too, more so than I maybe thought before when I think about it now. Because we did have, you know, access to money here from trust funds locally and just local people who were very generous to WRVS. There was maybe questions asked after that. I was going to tell you something else, but it's gone out of my head again. It'll come back.
Chloe, what was your most memorable moment of being in WRVS?
Oh, gosh. I think the Perth lads. Helping with them, I think. Yeah, I would have said so. I'll let you see the book.
Oh, excellent, thank you.
Is there anything else that you?
No, I think that's
not for the minute anyway.
I'll stop it for now, but thank you very much.